Corrus looked up to see a long stone quay looming up close at hand. The tide had turned long enough ago to leave the high-water garland of weed and shellfish a good foot and a half clear of the harbor, and the launch slid alongside a set of stone steps leading down into the sea. The two or three lowest of the exposed steps looked decidedly treacherous, covered with a slushy mix of residual seawater and falling snow, where they weren't still regularly sloshed over by the weary-looking swell. But the upper steps didn't look a lot better. There'd been enough traffic to pack the snow into ice, and it didn't look as if anyone had spread fresh sand across them in the last several hours.
"Mind the footing, my lord,"
the coxswain warned, and Corrus nodded in acknowledgement. He also reached into his purse to add an extra quarter mark to the boat crew's tip. That was probably exactly what the coxswain had hoped would happen, and the Earl knew it, but that didn't change his gratitude for the reminder.
"And you mind your footing too, Robert," he tossed over his shoulder, as he stood and stepped cautiously onto solid stone for the first time in a month.
The solid stone in question seemed to be curtsying and dipping underfoot, and he grimaced at the sensation. That wasn't going to help him get up these damn stairs undrenched, undrowned, and unfractured, he reflected glumly.
"I don't want to be fishing you or the baggage out of the damned harbor," he added,
as one of the launch's oarsmen helped the valet move Corrus's carefully balanced trunk.
"If it's all the same to you, my lord, I'd just as soon you didn't have to either,"
Sea Blanket replied, and Corrus snorted, took a firm and grateful grip on the hand rope rigged through eye bolts set into the side of the quay to serve as a railing, and made his way carefully up the slippery steps. He inhaled in relief as he finally reached the quay's broad, flat surface intact. Everything still seemed to be moving under his feet, and he wondered how long it was going to take him to regain his land legs this time. Given how extended and lively the passage across the gulf had been, he wouldn't be surprised if it took considerably longer than usual. He stepped away from the head of the stair, trying not to move too gingerly across the apparently swaying quay, then turned to watch Sea Blanket and one of the launch's oarsmen carrying the baggage cautiously up. The valet's expression was even more lugubrious than usual, and his long nose, red with cold, seemed to quiver as if he could actually smell some sort of accident or dropped trunk stealing surreptitiously closer under cover of the veiling snow. Despite any trepidation Sea Blanket might have felt, however, Corrus's trunks and valises made the hazardous journey up onto the quay unambushed by disaster. Sea Blanket had just clambered back down the slippery steps after his own more modest traveling bag when someone cleared his throat behind the Earl. He found himself facing a man wearing the blue-trimmed brown cassock of an underpriest of the Order of Chihiro under a thick, obviously warm coat. The priest seemed on the young side for his clerical rank, and although he was actually only very slightly above average in height, he also seemed somehow just a bit larger than life. The badge of Chihiro's quill on the left shoulder of his coat was crossed with a sheathed sword, further identifying him as a member of the Order of the Sword. Chihiro's order was unique in being divided into two sub-orders, the Order of the Sword, which produced a high percentage of the Temple Guard's officers, and the Order of the Quill, which produced an almost equally high percentage of the church's clerks and bureaucrats. Corrus rather doubted, given this fellow's obviously muscular physique and the calluses on the fingers of his sword hand, that anyone really needed the shoulder badge to know which aspect of Chihiro's order he served.
"Earl Corrus?" the underpriest inquired in a courteous voice.
"Yes, father," Corrus replied.
He bowed in polite acknowledgement, hoping his face didn't show his dismay. Having someone pop up clear down here at Quayside in the middle of a snowfall on a freezing cold day
When no one could possibly have known Snow Lizard would choose today for her arrival, did not strike him as a good sign. Or not, at least, where his hope of spending a day or two in a snug warm room was concerned.
"I'm Father Hollis Tanner, my lord," the underpriest told him. "I've been waiting for you for several days now."
"I'm afraid the weather was less than cooperative," Corus began, "and..."
"Please, my lord," Tanner smiled quickly. "That wasn't a complaint, I assure you. In fact, I know Captain Euthane quite well, and I'm confident he got you here as swiftly as humanly possible. In fact, given what I expect the weather was like, he made rather better time than I expected, even from him." "No, no," he shook his head. "I wasn't complaining about any tardiness on your part, my lord. Simply introducing myself as the fellow responsible for seeing you through the next, undoubtedly unpleasant leg of your journey."
"I see."
Corus considered the underpriest for a moment. Tanner couldn't be more than 35, he decided, and probably not quite that old. He was dark-haired and brown-eyed, with a swarthy complexion and the lean, lively features of a man who would never find it difficult to attract female companionship. There was what looked suspiciously like humor dancing in the depths of those eyes, and even simply standing motionless in the snow, he seemed to radiate an abundance of energy. And competence, the Earl decided.
"Well, Father Hollis," he said after a handful of seconds, "since you've been so forthright, I won't pretend I'm looking forward to the rigors of our trip, shall we say?"
"Nor should you be," Tanner told him cheerfully. "The bad news is that it's the better part of 1,300 miles as the wyvern flies from here to Lakeview, and we're not wyverns. It's a bit better than 1,700 by road, and what with snow, ice, and the Wishbone Mountains squarely in the way, it's going to take us very nearly a month just to get there. At least the high road follows the Raworth Valley, so we won't have to spend all our time climbing up and down. And I've arranged for relays of snow lizards to be waiting at the church posthouses all along our route, so we'll make fair time, I imagine, as long as we're not actively weatherbound. But even the valley's a good 700 or 800 feet higher than Fairstock, so I think we can safely assume the weather's going to be miserable enough to keep us off the roads for at least the equivalent of a 5-day or so, anyway.